Okay, you're very welcome back to the last hour of the 9 till noon show for this week. We have in studio with us our second panel of candidates seeking election in South Innishowen in Buncrana, Paul Canning of Fianna Fáil, Terry Crossan of Sinn Féin, Adrian McMillar, an independent, Niamh McGuinness of Sinn Féin, and Joy Beard, 100% redress. We invited the Green Party to take part, that they declined. Regarding the development plan, can the sitting councillors be asked why there has been no significant social housing plans made over the past decade when there is an avalanche of homelessness on the horizon due to the defective blocks crisis? Do you want to go first, Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Well, in relation to the development plan, the social housing, well, and I'll concentrate on South Innishowen, or Innishowen. We have a waiting list. We have a gross waiting list of council 640
on a housing waiting list.
As a waiting list, a gross waiting list of 650 people, roughly, or 50 families. Of that,
650 families or people?
650 people looking for houses.
Okay,
it could be
you.
Single men, it could be
could
families,
be whatever
could
be, it might be, yep.
Of that, the net figure of that is about 180. So we have over 400 that's on a HAP scheme that are already been catered for, roughly. And I think there's about 45 to 50 that is actually looking for transfer within the social housing scheme. That's the figures that the likes of myself and Terry would get every so often. In relation to that, I'll go with we have a building plan in my patch, right, for a better word. We have purchased a site in Newton Conyngham. The council have purchased it, and it's located in the village, and we're going to be building 28 houses in that area. We have a site in Killay that there's planning on it for 30 houses.
When would you anticipate construction
I would say both of them will be done within the 2 years, because there is work done in both sites. It's getting the land is the biggest problem, because of situations that you have with getting who owns it, how you buy it, all of that you have to go through. But regarding we'll just go quickly. I'll give you the individuals. You see the likes of Newton Conyngham has a waiting list of 42. Bridgend has a waiting list of 21. Carrigans is 15. Burnfoot is 14, Burt is 7, Killay.
And so on, yeah.
Yeah, no, those. So we try to target the location of our waiting list. Down in Muff, there's a waiting list of 27, right? So in relation to that, we have zoned areas in Muff for residential. So we've zoned that, and we added areas onto Muff, right? And we've done the same in Fáin, and Fáin is only a waiting list of about five people.
So what you're saying effectively is you're working on it.
We are definitely on top of the game in relation to that. Even though people say we're not, we are doing, we're waiting on Irish Water in relation to Bridgend and Burnfoot. And we have a developer that has land that we have zoned, but the problem being is we need to up the treatment plant in Bridgend now is at capacity.
It's the services as much as the it's the services, isn't it?
It's the services, and the problem we have. Sorry, before you get there, in relation to Bridgend and Burnfoot, for instance, both of those treatment systems they are going to be amalgamated and made basically into one to service both towns. But the problem we have there, which is another issue, is we have the flood relief scheme that we're waiting on to be delivered before we can do all that work. And that is holding the development of housing in those two areas.
Quite frustrating. Unfortunately, Terry Crossan, you wanted to come in there as a sitting councillor.
Thank you for that. There is no question that Donegal needs more affordable housing. I know that there is issues about land acquisition. When land is acquired, there's planning issues. There is a planning application in for a number of houses in the Muff area. There is issues regarding Japanese hotweed that has put the whole plan way back. It's going to take a long time until that's addressed and resolved. The bottom line is the government parties have failed on housing. You know, it's just not adequate. There are too many people homeless. There are too many people who can't
even... Yeah, but just in the local authority, I mean, you are part of it, right? Are you saying the council is also failing?
the council is failing at executive level in that it's too slow. There are too many people.
But what can you do to speed up dealing with Japanese knotweed? What can you do to deal with the delivery of a flood plan? What can you do to get Irish water to put in the sewers, the water, whatever might be necessary? I mean, is the council's hands not somewhat tied, really?
All that needs to be accelerated. Planning needs to be, and Paul is an expert in planning. Planning is so slow. There are so many issues. Irish water are so slow. They're so costly to install pipes. And it's just okay. Absolutely.
Niamh McGuinness, also running for Sinn Féin. Affordable housing and the lack of it is a big issue for you. And it kind of, the tone follows on from yesterday. Like if I were 20, and I'm not that far over it, but if I were 20, I'd kind of wonder, you know, where am I going to live? What's the option of me having, you know, something affordable to rent? 1,400 quid is, that would be a very big mortgage. But that's what we're talking for units of accommodation. And again, yesterday, and what I'm hearing today is, you know, there's very little hope in what's being said as to, you know, where you might live. Or when I say you, I don't mean you personally, mm-hmm. you know, someone of your age, when you're 23, 24, 25, or even 30.
Yeah.
You know, some of this feels like, really, will it be done in 10 years?
Exactly, Greg. As of right now, looking to the future with our current government and the plans and probably lack thereof in place, what am I supposed to do? What is people my generation supposed to do? I love Inishowen and I want to live here just how my parents have, just the way generations before me have. You know, they've all been afforded the right to take root and maybe start families. I can't do this. I can't afford to rent. I can't afford to buy and I won't be able to afford to build. It's just not feasible. It's not fair that I've been priced out of home ownership. You know, affordable houses haven't been built locally and I don't know how long. Maybe the sitting councillors could give me a proper figure on that.
Very few houses in the last 10 years. But the problem is it seems that the system is really what slows everything down. And any party can promise whatever they might like. But if Sinn Féin were in power, mm-hmm. They're still going to have to deal with this quagmire of regulation and delivery of services. Do you know what I mean? Like, they might promise whatever amount of houses it is per year. But it's clear from this conversation that the system's going to frustrate that, you know, the systems that are in place or the framework or whatever you might want to call it.
No, I see what you mean, but I'm sitting here today as a representative for people my age that are facing the issues that I'm facing. You know, I live at home and I don't plan on living at home forever. And I'm representing Sinn Féin because I truly believe they're going to deliver on these promises that are made to me. It's personal.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Adrian McMyler, another younger person.
Well, first things first, I want to say that Sinn Féin on the 7th of December 2020 objected to housing, social housing in Muncranna. So did it. So I don't know how they're saying we need more.
I don't have that information.
Well, I have it right in front of me here.
Okay.
The minutes of debate.
I'm not doubting you.
No, that's first things first. The second thing is I agree completely with Niamh McGuinness. Us young people is definitely facing struggles, especially in rural Ireland. People's emigrating every week, going to Australia, Canada, USA. We need to make rural Ireland more attractable to move home to. We need definitely affordable housing for sure and more of it.
Joy.
Yeah, well, I agree both what these two young people are saying, and I do sympathise with every young person that is wanting to settle down and make a life here. The future doesn't look bright for them. Why is that? Because of lack of planning, lack of forward thinking. Like, we're looking to increase our population here in Donegal, but what provisions have been made to increase housing, to increase our resources that we have here, our hospitals, our schools, so people can build a life here? As Adrian has said, you know, people are fleeing here in the plane loads because they don't have futures. My niece has recently left. She's a 30-year-old, has been a nurse for, you know, most of her working life. She's a skilled professional working in a very skilled profession. She was an intensive care nurse for a long time. These are skills that we need. But because of the lack of housing, she has no choice but to leave. Mm-hmm. She wants to start her own family. She can't afford the rents that you mentioned, 1,400. Who could afford that? She did apply for a mortgage. That mortgage was turned down. Now her partner is a recruitment advisor as well, another skilled profession. Now, they're two working people full time, and the mortgage is turned down, even though they could pay that mortgage. The banks aren't seeing what young people are going through. The banks are not lending, which is causing this to spiral out of control, to be honest.
Paul, did you want to come in there? Paul Canning?
Yeah, listen, in relation to, and it's a problem that we do have, and listen, the people, a lot of people have the right to, but there's, like, 2 years ago, there was over 70,000 people objections and with on board Planalla for housing units, 70,000. And the LRD would be the large regional development where you have a system where contractors or developers meet with planners and meet with landowners and try to address a lot of issues that might come while they put on the planning. So we have a lot of, we have a team that's actually working with developers to try and alleviate that. But you have issues here, you know, and there's this last year, there's 20,000 of those have been objected to. And these have went through the system. And in relation to even Letterkenny there, we have a couple of hundred houses that could have been built at this stage that was objected to.
A lot of it's NIMBYism as well. People want their own area to themselves.
Correct.
It's worth anyone going on the website to see where a lot of these objections actually come from, to inform
and that
themselves.
That holds the whole thing up, you know.
Yeah, Niamh, I just wanted to come to you, right? Because, you know, for you to be successful, mm-hmm. I mean, you would hope you have broad appeal to the electorate, okay? But, I mean, you would want, you know, maybe women. I don't know. Some women don't want that mentioned or do the same as fellas. But even young people, right? So you'd be appealing to those that maybe feel disenfranchised or not represented, and you'd want them to vote to you for you. But when you're out and about on the campaign trail, like, what is the, you know, what is the sense you're getting from young people and their interest in sort of local democracy or what have you? I mean, this could be a platform for you to end up going to Dáil, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an important election potentially. So, but do you find young people just go, sure, it's all, you know, what are they saying to you?
I think having been canvassing now for the past few weeks, young people are really appreciating a younger face coming around the doors and appealing to them, someone their own age facing the same issues, and as you said, particularly young women. There hasn't been a space for people like me in politics, I don't think ever really before, and I'm really grateful to Sinn Féin for taking the chance on me, allowing me to represent the electorate, because people my age, young women, young people, we make up the electorate. Donegal County Council makes decisions on our behalf, and I feel it's necessary that I need to reflect those same people in politics, and I would definitely encourage any other young people to follow the same path.
Terry Crossan, as a sitting councillor, do you have any concerns that Sinn Féin have over-egged the custard in that they're running too many candidates, that maybe the vote isn't there to get everyone across the line, splitting the vote effectively?
Well,
especially with competition like from the likes of 100% Redress et al.
That remains to be seen. People criticise it.
Wouldn't be the first time that Sinn Féin have ran too many candidates.
Yeah, absolutely. Thankfully, in my case, it wasn't. We were criticised on previous occasions that we didn't run enough candidates. There was an appetite there for exploring avenues to increase our representation. So the only way you can do that is if you take a chance and run extra candidates, and we have really good quality candidates. I mean, there is no question, like, Niamh is a top class candidate. There are other candidates in other areas, new candidates, young people, young women, and this is the way forward. Mm. This is the future of our party. And, you know, Sinn Féin again, if they are back, or if they get into government, in year one, they would deliver 13,000 affordable homes and 8,000 social homes.
Get Irish water on site. That's if you can get rid of. Yeah, but
if we're not,
but people need to. The public also need to be. We have to scrutinise that though, because as Paul Canning has pointed out, a lot of the barriers to delivery are going to be the exact same barriers that Sinn Féin would have to come to deliver. You know, it's not just simply, you can't turn up in a field and start building. You have to go through all the hoops and what have you. But anyway, listen, that is the commitment, and we'll see if you get an opportunity to deliver on it. Adrian McMiley, you wanted to come back in there running as an independent.
Yep, I just want to go on what Niamh was saying as well, with young people at the doors. The young people, especially Macrena and all the people I around my area, they're excited. Very excited that there's young candidates. There's a choice first time in this election for people from the 18 to 35 year olds to represent them. So the people are excited. I just want to say that as well.
All right, Joy Bird. Beard.
Yeah, well, what I'm finding the door, and it's lovely, as I say, to have that young representation, to be honest. I think it should be encouraged, as well as we do need more women in politics, as you mentioned, Niamh. I think, you know, we're 50% of the population. We really should have a voice in there. We have a different perspective on things and can put a different voice out there for different concerns. And I think that's very important that we are represented, to be honest. But I'm more keen on getting the right people in there, to be honest. The right people who are going to be our voice, move things forward. You were saying there about, you know, not on the doors, speaking to young people. I do find myself that people are disillusioned with politics in general. That's just not young people, but in general, I do think that people are a bit disillusioned with politics, both at local level and at government level. They've seen the failings time and time again. They've seen the housing crisis. People are on their knees. The defective concrete crisis is, you know, it's gone on too long. Do you know what I mean? People, 10 years of their lives.
I think it's
going
on to the point, on so long now, to the point where the population that aren't affected by it or aren't affected by it yet are almost eye-rolling when we start talking about it.
If you're not affected, you will be indirectly affected down the line by this crisis. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, it's worth noting that we can't cut just our hair because I think you want to speak. So everyone leave their hair alone. You're all right. You're like me, Terry. No, I'm only joking. It's worth noting that Paul Canning's figure on the social housing waiting list, he states there is a net waiting list of 480. He mentioned plans to build 58 social houses. What he failed to mention is that over 1,000 houses in the current stock are affected by defective concrete blocks. So the net 480 figure is at best inaccurate, at worst disingenuous. Do they feel enough is being done?
In relation to the situation, as much as we are well aware that we have 1,000 or whatever social houses and defective blocks, but those 1,000 not going to be done all in the first year. So the council is going to be putting a plan in place, and we have engineers that are looking at the situation. So we're probably going to take maybe the 10 houses or 15 houses or whatever for the first year, because the scheme, you have to be in and out in the 1 year. So we're going to take 14 or 15 houses, whatever that figure is. Now, I don't exactly know how they're going to do that per year, but that's roughly what they're going to be looking at. And what's going to happen is then, in their housing stock, they're going to have houses where they're going to put the people that into those houses and build them houses and have a system working. And that was sort of basically what Joy was saying at the offset, in relation, that's where she wanted the modular homes for, was to sort of have that system in place where you had you had modular homes, 10, 15, whatever figure, that people could move into that while their houses was fixed and do the whole circle. The issue with the modular homes, the standard that the modular home has to be is the standard of the actual house.
I was looking through comments here. Are you on about modular homes that are put in to for people to move into while houses are being rebuilt, or are you on modular homes?
No, I was saying that the issue that was brought up earlier about the modular homes, and I'm just sort of going from where, listening to the council themselves as to their thought on it, that the modular homes, they'd be more lasting if you were to do the permanent home.
But this modular home's been used right across the country.
I know that. But okay. The council's of a different opinion on that, in relation to that. But we will be doing, as a council, socially, and social house, I would say we'll be doing about 10 or 15 houses and just moving and continue to move. That's in the Buncrana area that will.
But you would be, would you not be in favour of some of this council land that has been acquired and providing there are some services on it? Would it not make sense to have a grouping of modular homes there that people can move in and out of? Because as I say, and I'm trying to avoid talking about other groups of individuals, but you know, you go down to Sligo, there's a village of modular homes that Ukrainians are living in, and it's the same right across the country. Why can't that be provided for victims of DCP?
I would say the council's of the same thought, but I think they're of a thought that why not just build the permanent homes to do that?
Okay, we need them now, though. You see, Joe, you want us to come back in there?
This is my issue. I don't think you realise, to be honest, Paul, how dangerous these homes are. These people need rehoused, and they need rehoused now. Mm. I contacted a modular home company who said they could have 30 modular homes in situ on a site in 30 days approximately. That would get those families out of those unsafe houses to places of safety. Then as their house is remediated, or I would like to think they would be demolished, as that house is demolished, the next family goes in. That's, you know what I mean? There has to be priority, because these houses are horrendous and they need help. There's been no forward planning by this government. There's been no forward planning by our council to get these people out of these homes. We've known about this issue for a decade and we're sitting here today going over this. The last debate we had that was in here in 2019, it was the same thing, and nothing has changed. And these houses are getting worse.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
I'm
not disagreeing. I'm only trying
When you talk about the council doesn't think that modular homes, it was the council that was charged with submitting a plan to Dara O'Brien on this issue, and we realise, or we've learnt now today from you, that that wasn't their favourite position from the beginning, which is a little bit concerning, I think, and maybe new information for listeners. But are you on about the executive of the council?
Yes.
Right, okay, so you're saying the executive you're of the view that they did not favour modular houses, that they believe money should be spent instead of building permanent houses?
Yes.
Okay, I feel like this is a court. Okay, it's not my intention. You indicated Terry Cross on that.
Yeah, just briefly, in the 80s, the Derry City Council had a project where they were going to upgrade all of Craigan almost, and they brought in 50 mobile homes and placed them in a central area and moved people into them, remediated their houses, moved them out. Great plan, and it worked.
I would say once these houses too were of no use, that maybe at some point weren't of use, there's lots of people would actually be prepared to move into them on a full-time basis as well, I would imagine.
Trust me, I don't want to be moving into a 20-year-old caravan to live in it for the next year and a bit. My husband works from home. He's going to be stuck in that caravan for the next year and a bit.
Mm. Now, a couple of people have texted in that what they're seeing on social media, Joy, and I mean, don't mean this insensitive at all, is that a lot of people that are saying the scheme's not fit for purpose, a lot of the campaigners, you know, Paddy Diver, yourself and others, are actually currently actively in the process now of working through the scheme, going through that awful experience of moving out, demolition and rebuilding. Yep. And some are pointing, saying, well, it can't be that bad if some of those running for election or campaigning are actually availing of the scheme and it's working for them.
I can tell you now.
Do you understand the point, though? I don't mean that in any way insensitive,
Joy. People don't have a choice. Do you think if I had a choice, I'd be moving out of my home? My house is unsafe. I've cracks in my ceiling. I've cracks in my wall. I have to, when it rains, gather up buckets to stop the rain coming in through several rooms. Do you think that's the way I want to live? Do you think I want to get into debt so as I can rebuild my home that I've already paid for? Definitely not. I don't have a choice but to move out of that home for my own safety, to be honest with you. And I think that's the same with a lot of people. Things are moving forward, but it's because people don't have a choice. They're getting themselves into debt because they need a safe home. And this has to end once and for all. Okay. 10 years of this is 10 years of my life far too long.
That's the voice there of Joy Beard, 100%. Beard, yes, 100% redress. We also have Niamh McGuinness of Sinn Féin, Adrian McMillar, who's an independent, Paul Canning of Fianna Fáil, and Terry Crossan of Sinn Féin. And we'll hear more from them after we take a break. Another big issue for all of us in the county is health. Terry Crossan of Sinn Féin, in a show, has faced its unique challenges in terms of health over the years. And of course, that all feeds into Letterkenny University Hospital, which we all share.
Well, Letterkenny Hospital, consistently one of the most overcrowded in the state, must be upgraded. You know, almost 100 GPs and consultants said it was unsafe last year but it's still overcrowded and understaffed. At Easter time, I spent 9 days in the hospital. I spent 12 hours on a chair. I spent 2 days on a bed on a corridor. No fault of the staff, purely a management issue. When I actually got into a ward, I couldn't have got treatment anywhere as good as it. So I have to praise the staff of the hospital for the great work that they are doing under very strenuous and arduous circumstances, and they can only be commended. On Highland News yesterday, I heard that another 226 children are waiting on disability assessments. I have cases in my own area at present that I'm trying to help with a family who has a child who has severe autism. On occasions can become very violent. The mother's a wee frail individual, has suffered serious injuries in the past and cannot get respite. Now, over this last 4 months, she has got one night respite. She had to cancel a hospital appointment for a serious operation because she couldn't get the respite that was required. And the child in question, adult boy, he only responds well to the mother. So she was in an awkward situation that she couldn't go and have her operation.
Niamh McGuinness?
I think instances, as Terry just pointed out, are the reasons why we absolutely need to pay more attention to our health services, to respite facilities. And I really want to focus on the care that we're given, not only, of course, to patients and people suffering with disabilities, but to our staff. An investment into these services is not just going to go to beds, which of course we need, and facilities, of course, which we need, but into the people directly working within them. You know, investing in these people only improves the services altogether, and it's been a gross negligence that they've been left to be overworked and overstretched. Councillor Brian Carr was on your show the other day, and I'd just like to make a quote that he made because I thought it was very insightful. You know, our 9 billion euro surplus, it's being kept for a rainy day, and Brian rightfully said, today is the rainy day.
Paul Canning.
Thanks, Greg. And listen, I have to agree with the previous speakers. Health is a major issue, and everybody has their own issues, and everybody out there has their own issues. We have an excellent facility, a new facility in Newton Cunningham, the primary care centre. We need it. We need extra services in it. I think the Letterkenny Hospital is inundated. There's waiting lists beyond waiting lists. I think we need to start bringing some of those items out of the Letterkenny Hospital. We need an X-ray department within the Newton Cunningham Primary Care Centre. And I think we need to sort of localise a lot of it and start working with the needs of the people, because the whole data protection and the file system and all that, and I'm probably, you know, in Letterkenny Hospital more often than I should be because of the circumstances. Mm-hmm. But it's you have to go through the whole system, and it's frustrating.
And yeah. What about the point though that, you know, like, there has to be a solution to it. It's not just us. We see what happens in Limerick and other hospitals as well. You know, we saw recent figures too of people that are actually dying in emergency departments. So they're actually dying whilst they're waiting to get treatment. I'm not saying that's causation, right? But it's just the reality. And we can only imagine, and some of us know what that's like for families. I mean, the 9 billion, you see, we have to keep referencing the 9 billion because that's what we're being told that shows how successful we are. But surely, really, the measure of success is how we treat people, and particularly, you know, older people, younger people, ill people. Yeah, like, do you think we should be using that money better?
Yeah. Going back to what Terry said in relation that, you know, how we treat people, is we're treating people well when we get them in. it's getting the numbers in. You know, when you get to where your destination, you are looked after well by the staff, but it's getting to there is the major issue, you know. And we are, and I'll not be the first and I'll certainly not be the last, we are the geographics of where we live is against us simply because we're not making use of the Northern Ireland facilities, and we should be working. We are doing small parts with Altony Galvin. We should be doing more. Like, you have people in South Inishowen.
But why is that not happening? What? I can't remember quite who it was I interviewed from the HSC, so I don't want to attribute the quote in a different way. But you know, the HSC really, the higher ups, don't seem to really see that as the future. They also don't really see as, it was said pretty much, if you want specialist treatment, you're going to have to travel for it. It's not going to be delivered where you are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So the HSC has really been quite upfront, in relation to that, not necessarily actively seeking to expand our cooperation with Northern Ireland and not actively seeking to provide some vital services up here. I mean, that's their policy. Terry, do you want to
come? And in all Ireland, Altony Galvin would be the future. You know, and we need to end the recruitment embargo
The Taoiseach says it's there is still an awful lot of recruitment going on where it's needed. But I take your point.
He also referred to people passing the parcel yesterday on your show.
Yeah. Another thing, just as a comment to you, Joy. Following on from more stories of the hospital, we inquired with the HSC to get a statement, and that statement actually acknowledged everything that was there, acknowledged how short and resource it was, and finished off saying, listen, don't come to the hospital unless you really, really have to. You know, back in the day, that would have been spun in a way to sort of say, you know, things can only get better or whatever. But now it's just a hands up. Yeah. It's not working. There are issues, and stay away unless you're really very, very sick.
Well, I think as anybody that does need to use our health facilities, I think they're growing increasingly frustrated. Health is the one thing that everybody values. Every single person values your health. Without your health, you have nothing. And the way I see it, the government seem to be treating our health service, treating the government actually as a business. It's a business. They don't seem to want to spend that $9 billion that they have in reserves. But when people's health's in jeopardy, that money should be forthcoming to solve that issue. But I do believe there is an overhaul needed in the HSE.
Do you think it's possible, just to that point, that the government believes that the HSE is so broken that there's no point throwing extra money at it at this point until they get things like contracts, working conditions and all that kind of stuff resolved?
You know, but nothing's, we're talking about today, there's been no planning, you know. Our healthcare is on its knees. Our doctors are leaving the shores because they're stressed. Our nurses, as I mentioned earlier, are leaving our shores. There's no services locally, really, for our people. They have to travel, you know. I do think that we do need to perform maybe more procedures in sort of community centres, you know, general treatments. I do think as well that we need to have minor injury clinics open locally to take that pressure off the hospital, maybe in the interim, but it's desperately needed, you know, because the hospital's on its knees. I've heard of people waiting 2 days just to be seen by someone that's going to be able to help them in pain with a burst of appendix.
Well, we heard from
it's
Terry, he was 2 days
shocking.
It's shocking
what's going on there, and it just cannot continue.
Yeah, Adrian McMillar.
Yeah, I agree completely with what every one of you said. Terry, you mentioned the respite services. That's actually one of the biggest issues come up at the doors. And I work with families with children with disabilities and long-term medical illnesses on a daily basis through the Buncrannish Children's Charity. And the respite services, like, the families are exhausted. The carers are exhausted. Like, it's so unfair there's no respite services. We need to get the Riverwalk and Cairndonna back open as soon as possible. And there should be houses as well in Muncranna for adults with disabilities and stuff as well, to look after them and to give people a break.
Access to CDNT services as well makes life for people incredibly difficult, and getting people into the roles that are available. Could we be doing more there? I wonder, Danny, if you have a view on that, Terry.
So there's children with cancer, and there's children with scoliosis who are having operations cancelled. You know, that's a scandal. Mm-hmm. That's an absolute scandal and can't go on.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally unacceptable.
Okay. And listen, I think we all accept that this a lot of this can't be resolved at council level, but we send, well, this is, I vote for someone to send them there to advocate and to be a strong voice on this, to put pressure on people if it's within their party, and to bring these issues to local reps and then local reps onto Dublin. That's how I see local democracy, our first port of call. So whilst a lot of this can't be affected there, I think, you know, it's that's why people want to know where people stand on a lot of these issues. Right, let me see. There's a few different things coming in here that I want to get. We don't have a ton of time, and I want to make sure that, yeah. Niamh, I want to come to you on cost of living. I'm conscious I just have not heard as much from you as I might like.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the cost of living crisis is another concern of yours. I'm sure we all share that, but I'll start with you on this issue. I'll come to you after that, Adrian, if mm-hmm. that's all right.
So I keep bringing it back to people like myself, people my age, because we're really feeling the pinches of the cost of living crisis. You know, the cost to live is too high. The cost of the weekly shop, fuel, petrol, diesel prices, insurance, and it's making it impossible for people to make ends meet. And a particular point that I'd like to make is in relation to fuel prices. So I've just recently purchased my own car, which is a fantastic step for me personally in my independent life, but I cannot afford to be putting petrol into the car as often as I am. I actually work in a petrol station, and I'm seeing it.
I wish.
I'm seeing it.
Yeah.
Every single day, no silly things like this of fueling your own car to get to work.
And then you put the minimum in often. That's what I used to do.
And you're just going back and back and back. Yeah.
You've the lights on a lot of the time for a lot of us. Yeah.
Small things like that. That's an absolutely essential for families. Yeah. That's really putting a burden on people.
Which then, I mean, obviously, in terms of getting around, that also hinders how much you can move around. Mm-hmm. You know, Adrian. Sorry, I said I'd come to you. I'll come, Niamh. If you want to add another point, please indicate to me. Go ahead, Adrian.
Yeah, just in terms of the
cost of living.
Yeah, well, as a young person myself, it is like I was over in Australia for a year. I had to emigrate due to the reason was the cost of living in Ireland was very high, but I decided to come home.
What was it like over there?
The cost of living was very high as well over there, to be honest.
Yeah. I think a lot of people go over there believing that, like, I'm not saying it's a great life experience, but the struggles with accommodation, the right accommodation.
It's similar to here, to be honest, as a young person. Yeah. Like, I'm very lucky that I live with my parents, but if I was to move out now, I probably wouldn't be able to find a house in Buncrana at the minute. Like, there's no available rental houses in Buncrana.
I don't think anyone, and we have to be honest about this, I'm not really sure anyone on an average wage could afford 1,400 a month plus other,
100%,
just plus other stuff.
Because
you can put another couple hundred on that for the insurance, your car tax, and that's before you've even eaten.
Yeah, sure.
Joy?
Yeah, well, there was in the Irish Examiner this week now, and they've said 70% of parents are worried about not being able to provide the daily essentials that their family need. Now, that's a shocking statistic in anybody's eyes. You know, I've been talking to families and they literally have not anything left at the end of the month. No provision, no savings. If anything happens, they're loaning, which adds extra pressure onto their monthly income or outgoings. You know, families are on their knees as in relation to the cost of living. You know, the rents are increasing and increasing. That can't be sustained for families. Families, as I say, they're suffering because of the cost of living. There has to be something put in place to try and help these families. You know, we've had the increased interest rates for the mortgages, you know, so if they were lucky enough to have their own home, again, these are all expenses families weren't expecting. These are all expenses that families are already struggling to do the day-to-day needs that they need. So, you know, we do need to start, you know, thinking about these families and how we can, and again, it's supply and demand with the rent and the housing situation. Because there's such high demand for rents, people are able to charge those big prices, but it's the families that are suffering because of that.
Make it make sense, someone. ESB, record profits. Multinationals, record profits. The grocery suppliers, etc. Insurance companies have made record profits. Banks have made record profits. Construction companies have made record profits. Construction industry suppliers are posting massive, massive numbers. those that provide broadband, record profits. What is going on that we're in a cost of living crisis? There's young people and older people can't afford just the basics, right? And all of the service suppliers are making record profits. They take from petrol and diesel for the government, record revenue coming in from, is it VRT? VAT. I mean, are we being taken for mugs here? We're the only ones that are experiencing record levels of deprivation and poverty. Everyone else is making big bucks.
Greg, if I could come in here, please. Under the current government, the cost of living keeps rising. In fact, they are fueling the increase in the cost of living with two more hikes planned for petrol and diesel in August, although they have hinted that they may not. But at the same time, they haven't said they're not going to do it.
Ironically, it's working because it's keeping Niamh out of her car. And these are levies to discourage people driving petrol and diesel cars.
Well, why are insurance costs continuing to rise? Why are they? And Piers Doherty has done sterling work in trying to put pressure on insurance companies, but yet they don't pay any heed. They just keep going ahead and going ahead and going ahead and increasing their profits at the cost of a normal working person.
Niamh, did you want to come back in there?
I just think while we're still on the topic of petrol and fuel hikes, so I'm from Bridgend, I live in Bridgend, I work in Bridgend. It's a border town. Yeah. The effects this is having on local businesses, such as fueling stations, when comparing southern prices to that in the north of Ireland, you're running people, like myself, out of a job, out of business. And I'm sure you might actually agree, it might sound silly, but local shops like this are a community hub. You know, I get to know the people in my area. They come in for their milk or their bread. And if you're ruining businesses like this, putting people out of work, my colleagues out of a job, because of rising fuel prices, it needs to stop.
Paul Canning?
Yeah, and first of all, in relation to the fuel prices, like, and I know Niamh has said about Bridgend, Northern Ireland have been coming out to get their petrol here and their diesel in this country. So we have been cheaper than the north. In relation to...
The only thing is it's the collective thing now,
yeah,
right?
So I understand.
You go over there, you get a bag of coal.
Yeah.
You go over and buy plastic bottles that don't have a levy on them, and you go over there and your shopping's cheaper.
Yeah.
So it's people are going to do the weekly in the round shop, I think, Paul, rather than just literally hopping for petrol or diesel.
In relation to the insurance, like, in my daughter got the insurance price, and you don't want to know what it was. Like, but I think whenever a person puts on a claim, there's not enough challenges by the insurance company themselves. They just pay out. And there's certain, you know, and then that then affects everybody. And that's part of the problem. And there needs to be a regulator in relation to the insurance, a proper regulator that needs to come in and say, listen, hold on a second here, not... Just
right.
Easy box.
Okay, we're at the end of it really now. Just maybe give you an opportunity for a final pitch, if that's all right. Adrian McMillar, Independent, in about 30 or 40 seconds. Why should people vote for you?
Please vote for me, Adrian McMillar, so I can continue helping people and delivering at a higher level for my community. I just don't talk the talk. I've already delivered and want to continue doing so. I'm passionate about helping others, making change and improving lives in South Finnishoan. Through improved housing, employment, tourism, healthcare, public infrastructure and services. We need fresh ideas and new energy on the council, and I believe I am the right person for this role.
Joe, yep.
Vote Independent, vote Adrian McMillar on June 7th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Joy.
Yeah, well, it's clear
Beard.
The status quo is not working and change is desperately needed. The majority of our sitting councillors are too quiet, especially in relation to the defective concrete crisis. It's simply not good enough. And it's an insult to these families living through this humanitarian crisis. Of course, we do need more females in the council. But more importantly, we need to have the right people in there who are going to make changes for Donegal and the county to make it the best it can possibly be. Vote Joy Beard, number one, on the 7th of June.
Terry Crossan.
Yeah, well, if you are fed up with the ongoing issue with the defective blocks and the lack of 100% redress, if you're fed up with the housing crisis, the health crisis, the rising cost of living, the strongest message you can send to this government is to say enough is enough and vote for Terry Crossan, number one in the Quigley's Point, Hough areas and South and East Shone areas. A vote for me is a vote for the community.
Paul Canning.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks to everyone that's here and thanks, Greg, for the show. I would ask people to vote in South and East Shone for Paul Canning, number one, purely to allow me to complete the work and finish the work that I am doing at the minute. In relation to our housing, we have a plan in place. We will be building about 50-odd houses in the next 2 years. So to get people on the council waiting list, to get them off the council waiting list. So I'm asking people to allow me to continue the work that I'm already doing by voting number one for Paul Canning on June the 7th.
Okay, and last but not least, Niamh McGuinness of Sinn Féin.
Thank you, Greg. So my core message to voters is to vote in order to gain the political representation they deserve. They're hard-working, intelligent women and young people all across our society, in the home, running businesses, engaged with sports clubs, and these same people are capable of leading our communities and shaping policies that impact our daily lives. Their voices, experiences and perspectives are invaluable in creating a fair and just society. By voting, you empower these women and young people and ensure that our political landscape reflects the diversity and strength of our nation.
Are you not going to say vote Niamh McGuinness number
one? Vote Niamh McGuinness number one.
Okay, listen, he's all did brilliant. Thank you so very much indeed.
The very best
Okay, thanks very much for that. All right, that's where we have to leave it. That is the last of our pre-election debates. Everyone was invited. The overwhelming majority accepted. We appreciate that. You can listen back to all the debates, all 11, from the local electoral areas and also, of course, the five European election debates. Thanks to Oisin Kelly and Joe Dex, who made it possible technically. We're back with a regular show on Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend. And thank you, by the way, for all of you who've taken part over the last couple of weeks. It's very much appreciated. For me, Greg Hughes and the team, enjoy your long weekend and we'll chat to you Tuesday.